The Honorable Chief Justice
and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first cases this morning are 2021-190 and 2021-191. Portage County Educators Association for Developmental Disabilities, Unit B. Versus the State Employment Relations Board and the Portage County Board of Developmental Disabilities. Mr. Clark.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, appellants would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The U.S. Supreme Court has already established that a content-neutral restriction on picketing in front of specific private residences is a valid constitutional time, place, and manner restriction. And under the same analysis, the same is true for a restriction on picketing in front of public officials' specific places of private employment. Such a restriction serves the significant interest of protecting privacy of those who find themselves a captive audience to unwanted speech. This interest is all the more important in this day and age, where public officials face targeted picketing that very well may discourage people from volunteering for necessary public service. A statute that limits targeted picketing in the limited areas of public officials' residences or places of private employment goes no further than necessary to achieve this purpose.
Counselor, how is it relevant that the speech is something that someone doesn't want to hear?
Well, under Frisbee versus Schultz, Your Honor, and Phelps Roper in the Sixth Circuit, Your Honor. I'm not sure about Madsen, but the court has held that if a party is captive by virtue of circumstances, then at least in a content-neutral situation.
Would be content-neutral if it's something that they didn't want to hear, if it was unwanted.
I think the issue there is just hearing the speech generally versus what the actual content of that speech is. So the analysis for the analysis for captive audiences is about where these people are. Obviously, from Frisbee versus Schultz, if you're in your home, you can't go somewhere else, or at least you shouldn't have to, right? But also Phelps Roper, if you're at a funeral, right? And likewise, if you're at your private place of employment, you can't leave your job to avoid hearing a message. The content of that message doesn't matter for that.
So it doesn't matter? So someone, this makes it illegal for people to stand outside of public officials' yard and chant, let's go Bengals?
Under the statute, the targeted picketing statute, the content of the message does not matter.
So if these people had stood outside a person's yard and said, let's go Bengals, that would have been illegal?
Your Honor, right.
Would it depend on if they were Browns fans or?
No, Your Honor. So, indeed, in this.
Yes, no question. Would it have been illegal?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because that's not what the statute says, though.
The statute says in the context of a labor relations dispute.
Well, this wouldn't be about a labor if they were just because they wanted the Bengals to win. Would it be illegal for them to do that?
Targeted picketing, yes, Your Honor, because
if they had been out there because they were concerned about the outcome of the game and wanted people to know that, would that have been illegal?
If they are a covered person encouraging picketing during a labor relations dispute, then the content of the targeted picketing doesn't matter. There's two reasons for that. First, targeted picketing, as the case law has explained, and we've...
What is targeted picketing?
Picketing at a specific location. And picketing, while it enjoys First Amendment protection,
So picketing can be about any subject.
Under the targeted picketing statute, what matters is not content. What matters is time. Is it during ongoing labor relationship?
So this law prevents anyone during a labor dispute from standing outside a public official's house. Is that what you're saying? You could arrest anyone, whether or not they had any connection with the labor dispute.
Well, it prohibits certain covered people from encouraging.
Okay, then it's not content neutral, right?
It is, because specifically because it does not matter what is on the sign. That's what makes it content neutral.
But it matters who's saying it. It matters when they're saying it. That's based on content, right? It's based on being during a labor dispute.
So, Your Honor, two answers to that question. Your Honor asked, it matters when and who. When it comes to when, which is all that in the context of a labor relations dispute means, that is simply a matter of a time restriction as opposed to a content restriction. When it comes to who, that's another question. And as appellees cite the Citizens United case, sometimes if you're picking and choosing between certain speakers, that can make it a content-based restriction,
right.
But here,
I mean, this isn't a restriction that says no one can stand outside a public official's house and protest. It says certain people at certain times can't protest about certain things. That seems pretty content-based.
I would agree that it says certain people cannot protest at certain places at certain times. I do not agree that it says about certain things. And when it comes to the language about in the context of a labor relation dispute or in the context of who is covered, all that language is doing is clarifying then that this statute is part of the definition of what constitutes an unfair labor practice.
Well, let me ask it this way. There's an injunction hearing, which happens during labor disputes, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Can somebody go in front of the trial judge's house and protest and picket? The elected judge, elected official, during a labor dispute, and there's an injunction hearing, can somebody go there, encourage people to go there and protest or not?
I believe they can, Your Honor. The statute only covers the places of employment or residences of the board official.
The residence of a judge. They're at the private residence.
The statute only covers the residences and places of private employment of the board members, not any judge that would be deciding some sort of dispute between the parties.
Well, then if the content, wouldn't the content matter there?
No, Your Honor. The only thing that the targeted picketing statute is doing, the closest it comes, the basis for Appelli's argument in this case is that because it says the words in the context of a labor relations dispute, it's content-based versus neutral. But that is only simply stating the obvious. When you are writing a statute that involves what constitutes an unfair labor practice, then, as we say in our brief, if it was in the context of a dispute about police conduct, obviously that's not unfair labor practice. And as we
could be.
In some sense,
yes.
The reverse is also true. If the content mattered, then the statute would become ineffective, because protesters could go in front of a board member's house and put up a sign that maybe says, "Let's go Bengals," right? Or something completely unrelated, even though the obvious purpose was the same targeted picketing.
Exactly.
Relating to the labor relations dispute. So that's why, based on the plain language of the statute, but also how you would possibly enforce it, you cannot be looking at the content of the sign, which makes it content neutral. Rather, we're looking at the time element.
Counsel, the identity of the protesters matters here as well, does it not?
The identity of the encourager is defined in the statute. The protesters themselves is not. But again, the statute defines what constitutes unfair labor practices, whether it be on the employer side or the employee side. So just clarifying that this particular part of the definition of an unfair labor practice says that people on the employer side can't picket, people on the employee side cannot picket people on the employer side, is part and parcel with, again, occupying the entire field of what is trying to be defined. In contrast, the Mosley case, the Carey v. Brown case on which appellees rely, they were generally applicable statutes that said you cannot protest in front of, for instance, a school.
But for this statute, so it's only inducing or encouraging, but individuals can on their own do it.
Yes, Your Honor. If individuals on their own, without having been induced by a covered person, would not fit under the statute of unfair labor.
But a covered person, him or herself, could pick it.
I don't know the answer to that question. I believe that could be itself inducing.
You could induce yourself to go pick it?
I don't know the answer to that question, Your Honor. I think ultimately, though, the parties agree that we're not arguing that because it's only inducing versus picketing itself, that somehow that takes it outside of the realm of the framework of...
But isn't that what the statute says?
It certainly does say that, Your Honor.
Induce or encourage any individual.
It does say that, Your Honor. I don't think that ultimately affects the analysis for First Amendment review. I just think ultimately the question is, you know, can someone be in front of the House? And the answer is only during an ongoing labor dispute, only in... each board has seven members, only at seven particular residences, only at up to seven particular private places of employment. Anywhere else is fair game. And
right, but what you're saying makes it about the content, right? Because it's only directed at specific people. It's only directed while there's a labor dispute going on. I mean, this is not like saying a city has a regulation that says you can't picket after 11 p.m. in front of anyone's house. This says these specific people because of the content of what's going on here. It's completely based on content.
Just
saying, well, There's no restrictions on what the signs say. It doesn't make it content neutral. It's picked out the people who it applies to because they're involved in a labor dispute.
Your Honor, I've got one more minute before rebuttal, but in the Madsen case that we cite in our briefs, the United States Supreme Court rejected the argument that an injunction that only applied to anti-abortion protesters was content-based. And the reason was because the context of the restriction at issue covered only anti-abortion protesters, right? So the argument was it's only certain people, only certain remarks, only certain content. And the United States Supreme Court said, yeah, but that's because we're here in this context, and the restriction is not picking and choosing within the context under which we find ourselves, which is the case in the Mosley and the Carey cases, where they're saying you can't pick it at all in front of a school, for instance, except if it's about labor. Now you're picking and choosing content versus simply defining that when we're in the context of the Collective Bargaining Act and we're trying to define unfair labor practices, we're going to make it clear that obviously it has to be during a labor dispute as opposed to something completely unrelated.
So the school case essentially says you can't picket here except about labor. This restriction says you can picket about anything else at these people's house except about labor, right? So they're the same thing. They're just the flip side of each other.
I would disagree, Your Honor. The restriction here is defining a labor practice, so it has nothing to do. It's just that is the context in which it finds itself, and within that context, it does not say you can say this thing but not this thing. You can, you know, certain employee people might be able to protest, but not others. It simply occupies the field.
But you can't send a message to these people about labor dispute. That's what this is about, right? That you cannot send a message about a labor dispute to them in front of their house.
It is an unfair labor practice under the statute to send any message to them in front of their house in the time of a labor relations dispute.
So their presence alone is a message. In other words, if they don't have signs, they're not chanting, they're not doing anything, but 25 people show up in front of, or whatever number, show up in front of a board member's property.
I don't know the boundaries of what would be picketing as the word is used.
Right? What's picketing?
But I think that if you were in front of the house without signs, mm-hmm. Making your presence known, you know,
just walking around in a circle or up and down the sidewalk or whatever.
I think, you know, probably walking around in a circle starts to sound like picketing, but walking.
But the statute doesn't define picketing.
Correct, Your Honor.
Not even the statute about funerals. There's no definition in the revised code of picket.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. Right. And so
that narrowly tailored?
Well, I don't know if, I mean, I don't believe that anyone, I don't believe that there would be an argument that if someone happens to be walking along the sidewalk and crosses through that, you know, that particular residence.
I don't mean that. I mean a group of people that are interested, you know, they're employees, and they're just there, not chanting, not wearing T-shirts, not doing anything, just silently standing in front of the house.
I think if it were a large group, it may, you know.
So you don't have an answer. Let's cut to the chase.
I don't know the boundaries of exactly what picketing would be in this particular case, of course, and I understand it's a different hypothetical, but, you know, there was obvious picketing going on. No one disputes that.
Right.
It's just
trying to figure out how far this, you know, would go.
Yes, sir.
Okay, you've used your time.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Field.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. Revised Code Section 4117.11b7 violates the First Amendment for two reasons. First, it is a content-based restriction. It restricts only the speech of a labor union in connection with a labor relations dispute. Second, it is a disfavored speaker regulation. Even if it doesn't directly regulate the content of the union speech, it applies only to labor associations. So it is a disfavored speaker regulation.
Well, what about the fact that it's limited to a time? In other words, when there is a labor dispute. So this is these are the rules within the confines of that labor dispute.
I don't think that's what the statute regulates, Your Honor. I don't think it regulates time. It regulates speech in connection with. And as the 11th...
In connection with a labor dispute, which is finite, I would hope. Is that not correct?
I don't think it is, Your Honor, and here's why. If you look at SERB's brief, their opening brief at page 17, SERB says this: the language simply makes clear that the statute defining an unfair labor practice is obviously limited to the context of an ongoing labor dispute. Otherwise, the statute could be read to define, for example, picketing related to abortions or picketing related to police misconduct as an unfair labor practice. So there, SERB seems to concede that if the picketing were related to abortion or police misconduct, it would be lawful under the statute and not an unfair labor practice. Now, I recognize SERB backtracked on that argument in their reply brief, but I don't think the phrase in connection with is logically read to mean a time restriction. It's meant to regulate the content of the speech. In connection with, as the 11th District found here, means related to.
If they're not in a labor dispute, if there's no labor dispute going on, can the same people show up with signs in front of a board member's home?
They could, Your Honor. They could.
Okay. All right. So your labor dispute is, you know, 3 months. So for 9 months, the same people can go out and do the same activity without violating any part of the statute. So why is that not time limited?
Even if it is time limited, Your Honor, it's overbroad, and here's why. There's no definition in the revised code of what a labor dispute is. And if the court looks at its definition of a labor dispute, it's a very broad definition that could include even grievances. And so any time a grievance was pending, the union would be prohibited from encouraging or inducing speech related to a grievance or any other matter. So it's not just a temporal, a narrow time limit when there's a contract dispute such as was involved here. It could be much broader than that. So I think that shows that the statute
is. Are there any cases that involve something, you know, a low-level grievance as being the subject that would be encompassed by these words?
There was a case out of the 6th District, Your Honor, and I don't have the site handy, nor did we cite it in our brief, but there's a 6th District case out of Toledo that held under the National Labor Relations Act that a grievance was a labor dispute.
Isn't it significant here that if it's a time limitation, the time limitation is based on the content of the speech? Like if you couldn't have a time limitation that said you can't speak about political issues at election time.
That's correct, Your Honor. It still goes back to the point that it's a disfavored speaker regulation. Even if there is a temporal limit read into the language of the statute, it's still a disfavored speaker regulation because it regulates only the speech of the labor association. Disfavored speaker regulations are also subject to strict scrutiny. The CERB cites cases arguing that this statute is subject to intermediate scrutiny as a time, place, and manner restriction. Even if it is a time, place, and manner restriction, it does not leave open ample alternative avenues of communication. The fact that the statute would limit only picketing at the board members' homes and the board members' places of employment, those are the most effective places to reach to get your speech to the board members. The board meets once a month. They're unelected officials. They don't have a regular time that they're at the board's office. For it to be an ample alternative means of communication, you have to be able to get your message to your intended audience.
And you can't do that any other way?
It's not whether you can do it any other way, Your Honor. It's whether this statute is narrowly tailored to achieve the significant government interest. And the fact that they could stand on the street corner in one end of the county and try to get the message to a board member who lives at the other end of the county, that's not an ample alternative method of communication. So even if it is a time, place, or manner restriction, it does not pass the test of intermediate scrutiny. I want to turn briefly to why this is not a lawful secondary boycott provision. For a secondary boycott to be unlawful, it has to involve threats or coercion or intimidation or an attempt to force somebody to stop doing business with another entity. This statute does not require a finding of threat, force, or coercion or an attempt to coerce one business to stop doing business with another entity. It simply prohibits speech at specific locations. So it's not a secondary boycott provision because it doesn't require a finding of threats, coercion, or intimidation. The United States Supreme Court has recognized that secondary boycotts are lawful in the NLRB versus retail case, that secondary boycotts are lawful if they do not have that element of threats, coercion, or intimidation. Again, this statute does not contain any such requirements, so it is not a lawful secondary boycott provision. If the court has no other questions, we would ask that the decision of the 11th District be affirmed.
Thank you. Mr. Hrabowski.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Ron Obowski on behalf of the Portage County Board of Developmental Disabilities. I would like to start by pointing out that this court and the United States Supreme Court have both established that time, manner, and place restrictions under a given set of circumstances can be constitutionally permissible. That's the first thing, and you have said that, as has the Ward and the Mosey cases that everybody involved in this looks at. The conditions that are necessary to show that is that the restrictions are justified without any reference to the content, and the restrictions are narrowly tailored to represent a government, a significant government interest. And a third part is that they leave ample channels of communication available to the union. I think that, pardon me, sir? Who's?
Go on.
Okay. The other thing I would bring to the court's attention is that it is the board's position that this is a police restriction. And I think the example that we have used at the lower levels best exemplifies that assertion, in that if a board member, current board member, would move to a new residence, there would be no restrictions from this statute at all at the board member's former residence. It would move to the new one. That's the first point. The second part is, under the statute itself doesn't refer to any content language at all. It just doesn't do it. And we showed in our brief that the narrowness of this is seven driveways, seven residences out of 70,000 people in the county, up to seven places of private employment out of 30,000 or 3,000 private employment places in the county. I think that more than meets the narrowness test that is required to get this approved as an exception under time, manner, and place. The last thing I would like to do is share with you how DD boards stand out different from all public employers. These folks are unpaid volunteers. Other areas of the law require them, a majority of these members, to have an immediate family member in the program or eligible to be put in a program. That's the first. The second part is the minority composite, the majority of the board has to have that immediate member family. The two of the seven board members come from the professional, local professional talent, doctors, accountants, bricklayers, wherever they come from. They're also in this, but they are unpaid, they are volunteers, and I think it is a significant interest. If you would look at all of chapter 5126 is dedicated to the board of DD's responsibilities and interest, if you will.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision. Mm-hmm.